what have you got for your next? How about the Olmsted Falls High School Choir with Stayin' Alive?
Candyman can, 'cause he mixes it with love.
Rodney Allen Rippey there, and the Candyman. And that's just about it for another week here on the World's Worst Records Radio Show. But do stay tuned, because coming up next, it's High Waisted Modernists with the wonderful DJ Georgie Girl, which is followed by New Flanland with Flannery. Have a great week, and I look forward to seeing you all again here next Wednesday on the World's Worst Records Radio Show. Until the next time.
Goodbye, goodbye. Wipe the tear, baby dear, from your eye. Though it's hard to part, I know I'll be tickled to death to go. Don't cry, don't sigh. There's a silver lining in the sky. Bonsoir, old thing, cheerio, chin chin. Now poo, toodaloo, goodbye.
Follow the World's Worst Records blog at www.worldsworstrecords.blogspot.com.
Words. Sounds. You're listening to High Waisted Modernists with me, DJ Gigi, the blue-haired hippie.
Before he had been in Brighton 3 hours, that they meant to murder him. With his inky fingers and his bitten nails, his manner cynical and nervous, anyone could tell he didn't belong. Belong to the early summer sun, the cool Whitsun wind off the sea, the holiday crowd. Thank you. by train from Victoria every 5 minutes, rocked down Queen's Road standing on the tops of the little local trams, stepped off in bewildered multitudes into fresh and glittering air. The new silver paint sparkled on the piers. The cream houses ran away into the west like a pale Victorian watercolour. A race in miniature motors, a band playing, flower gardens in bloom below the front, an aeroplane advertising something for the health in pale vanishing clouds across the sky. It had seemed quite easy to Hale to be lost in Brighton. 50,000 people besides himself were down for the day, and for quite a while he gave himself up to the good day, drinking gins and tonics wherever his programme allowed, for he had to stick closely to a programme. Till 11 Queen's Road and Castle Square. From 11 till 12 the Aquarium and Palace Pier. 12 till 1 the front between the Old Ship and West Pier, back for lunch between 1 and 2 in any restaurant he chose around the castle square, and after that he had to make his way all down the parade to the West Pier and then to the station by the Hove streets. These were the limits of his absurd and widely advertised Centrico. Advertised on every messenger post. Collie Kibber, in Brighton today. In his pocket he had a packet of cards to distribute in hidden places along his route. Those who found them would receive 10 shillings from the messenger, but the big prize was reserved for whoever challenged Hale in the proper form of words and with a copy of the messenger in his hand. "You are Mr. Collie Kibber. I claim the Daily Messenger Prize." This was Hale's job to do Centrico until a challenger released him in every seaside town in turn. Yesterday Southend, today Brighton, tomorrow... He drank his gin and tonic hastily as a clock struck 11 and moved out of Castle Square. Collie Kibber always played fair, always wore the same kind of hat as in the photograph the messenger printed, was always on time. Yesterday in Southend he had been unchallenged. The paper liked to save its guineas occasionally, but not too often. It was his duty today to be spotted, and it was his inclination too. There were reasons why he didn't feel too safe in Brighton, even in a Whitsun crowd. leant against the rail near the palace pier and showed his face to the crowd as it coiled endlessly past him, like a twisted piece of wire, two by two, each with an air of sober and determined gaiety. They had stood all the way from Victoria in crowded carriages. They would have to wait in queues for lunch. At midnight, half asleep, they would rock back in trains to the cramped streets and the closed pubs and the weary walk home. With immense labour and immense patience, they extricated from the long day the grain of pleasure. This sun, this music, the rattle of the miniature cars, the ghost train diving between the grinning skeletons under the Aquarian promenade, the sticks of Brighton Rock, the paper sailors' caps. Any attention to Hale. No one seemed to be carrying a messenger. He deposited one of his cards carefully on the top of a little basket and moved on, with his bitten nails and his inky fingers, alone. He only felt his loneliness after his third gin. Until then, he despised the crowd, but afterwards he felt his kinship. He had come out of the same streets, but he was condemned by his higher pay to pretend to want other things, and all the time the peers, the peep shows pulled at his heart. He wanted to get back, but all he could do was to carry his sneer along the front, the badge of loneliness. A woman was singing, "When I came up from Brighton by the train." A rich Guinness voice, a voice from a public bar. Hale turned into the private saloon and watched her big blown charms across two bars and through a glass partition. She wasn't old, somewhere in the late 30s or the early 40s, and she was only a little drunk in a friendly, accommodating way. You thought of sucking babies when you looked at her. But if she'd borne them, she hadn't let them pull her down. She took care of herself. Her lipstick told you that. The confidence of her big body. She was well covered, but she wasn't careless. She kept her lines for those who cared for lines. Hale did. He was a small man, and he watched her with covetous envy over the empty glasses tipped up in the lead trough, over the beer handles, between the shoulders of the two serving in the public bar. "Give us another, Lily," one of them said, and she began, "One night in an alley, Laura Rothschild said to me." She never got beyond a few lines. She wanted to laugh too much to give her voice a chance, but she had an inexhaustible memory for ballads. Hale had never heard one of them before. glass to his lips, he watched her with nostalgia. She was off again on a song which must have dated back to the Australian Gold Rush. Fred, a voice said behind him. Fred! The gin slopped out of Hale's glass onto the bar. A boy of about 17 watched him from the door, a shabby smart suit, the cloth too thin for much wear, a face of starved intensity, a kind of hideous and unnatural pride. Difference, the boy said. He turned back towards the door, keeping an eye on Hale over his narrow shoulder. Where are you going? Got to tell your friends, the boy said. They were alone in the saloon bar except for an old commissionaire who slept over a pint glass of Old and Mild. Listen, Hale said, have a drink. Come and sit down over here and have a drink. Got to be going, the boy said. You know I don't drink, Fred. You forget a lot, don't you?
Thank you.
won't make any difference having one drink, a soft drink. It'll have to be a quick one, the boy said. He watched Hale all the time closely and with wonder. You might expect a hunter searching through the jungle for some half-fabulous beast to look like that, at the spotted lion or the pygmy elephant before the kill. A grapefruit squash, he said. Go on, Lily, the voices implored in the public bar. Give us another, Lily. And the boy took his eyes for the first time from Hale and looked across the partition at the big breasts and the blown charm. Double whiskey and a grapefruit squash, Hale said. He carried them to a table, but the boy didn't follow. He was watching the woman with an expression of furious distaste. Hale felt as if hatred had been momentarily loosened like handcuffs to be fastened round another's wrists. He tried to joke. Cheery soul. Soul, the boy said. You've no cause to talk about souls. He turned his hatred back on Hale, drinking down the grapefruit squash in a single draught. Hale said, I'm only here for my job, just for the day. I'm Collie Kibber. You're Fred, the boy said. All right, Hale said, I'm Fred, but I've got a card in my pocket which will be worth 10 bob to you. Oh, I know all about the cards, the boy said. fair smooth skin, the faintest down, and his grey eyes had an effect of heartlessness, like an old man's in which human feeling has died. "We was all reading about you," he said, "in the paper this morning." And suddenly he sniggered, as if he'd just seen the point of a dirty story. "You can have one," Hale said. "Look, take this messenger. Read what it says there. You can have the whole prize. 10 guineas, he said. "You'll only have to send this form to the messenger." "They don't trust you with the cash," the boy said. And in the other bar, Lily began to sing. "We met, 'twas in a crowd, and I thought he would shun me." "Christ," the boy said. "Won't anybody stop that boy's mouth?" "I'll give you a fiver," Hale said. "It's all I've got on me. That and my ticket." "You won't want your ticket," the boy said. "I wore my bridal robe and I rivaled its whiteness." The boy rose furiously and, giving way to a little vicious spurt of hatred at the song, at the man, he dropped his empty glass onto the floor. "The gentleman'll pay," he said to the barman and swung through the door of the private lounge. It was then Hale realised that they meant to murder him. Marchioness slept on, and Hale watched her from the deserted elegant lounge. Her big breasts pointed through the thin, vulgar summer dress, and he thought, I must get away from here. I must get away. Sadly and desperately watching her, as if he were gazing at life itself in the public bar. But he couldn't get away. He had his job to do. They were particular on the messenger. It was a good paper to be on, and a little flare of pride went up in Hale's heart when he thought of the long pilgrimage behind him, selling newspapers at street corners, the reporter's job at 30 bob a week on the little local paper with a circulation of 10,000, the 5 years in Sheffield. He was damned, he told himself, with the temporary courage of another whiskey, if he'd let that mob frighten him into spoiling his job. What could they do while he had people round him? They hadn't the nerve to kill him in broad day before witnesses. He was safe with the 50,000 visitors. First, she was speaking to him, until he saw all the faces in the public bar grinning across at him, and suddenly he thought how easily the mob could get at him with only the sleeping commissionaire to keep him company. There was no need to go outside to reach the other bar. He only had to make a semicircle through three doors by way of the saloon bar, the ladies only. What will you have? He said, approaching the big woman with starved gratitude. She could save my life, he thought, if she'd let me stick to her. I'll have a port, she said. One port, Hale said. Aren't you having one? No, Hale said. I've drunk enough. I mustn't get sleepy. Why, ever not on holiday? Have a bath on me. I don't like baths. He looked at his watch. It was 1 o'clock. His programme fretted at his mind. He had to leave cards in every section. The paper in that way kept a check on him. They could always tell if he scamped his job. Thank you. "Come and have a bite," he implored her. "Hark at him," she called to her friends. Her warm port winey laugh filled all the bars. "Get him fresh, eh? I wouldn't trust myself." "Don't you go, Lily," they told her. "He's not safe." "I wouldn't trust myself," she repeated, closing one soft, friendly, cow-like eye. A way. Hale knew to make her come. He had known the way once. On 30 bob a week, he would have been right at home with her. He would have known the right phrase, the right joke, to cut her out from among her friends, to be friendly at a snack bar. But he'd lost touch. He had nothing to say. He could only repeat, "Come and have a bite." "Where should we go, Sir Horace? To the old ship?" "Yes," Hale said, "if you like. The old ship." "This gentleman's invited me to the old ship," she said in a mock refined voice. "Tomorrow I shall be delighted, but today I have a prior engagement at the Dirty Dog." To the door. The boy, he thought, would not have had time to warn the others yet. He would be safe at lunch. It was the hour he had to pass after lunch he dreaded most. The woman said, "Are you sick or something?" His eyes turned to the big breasts. She was like darkness to him. Shelter, knowledge, common sense. His heart ached at the sight. But in his little inky, cynical framework of bone, pride bobbed up again, taunting him. "To the womb, be a mother to you, no more standing on your own feet." "No," he said, "I'm not sick, I'm all right." "You look queer," she said in a friendly, concerned way. "I'm all right," he said, "hungry, that's all." "Well, I'd have a bite here," the woman said. "You could do him a ham sandwich, couldn't you, Belle?" And the barman said yes, he could do him a ham sandwich. "No," Hale said, "I've got to be getting on." getting on, down the front, mixing as quickly as possible with the current of the crowd, glancing to right and left of him and over each shoulder in turn. He could see no familiar face anywhere, but he felt no relief. He thought he could lose himself safely in a crowd, but now the people he was among seemed like a thick forest in which a native could arrange his poisoned ambush. He couldn't see beyond the man in flannels just in front, and when he turned, his vision was blocked by a brilliant scarlet blouse. Three old ladies went driving by in an open horse-drawn carriage. The gentle clatter faded like peace. That was how some people still lived. The road away from the front. There were fewer people there. He could walk faster and go further. They were drinking cocktails on the terrace of the Grand, a delicate pastiche of a Victorian sunshade twisted its ribbons and flowers in the sun, and a man like a retired statesman, all silver hair and powdered skin and doubled old-fashioned eyeglasses, let life slip naturally, with dignity, away from him, sitting over a sherry. Steps of the Cosmopolitan came a couple of women with bright brass hair and ermine coats and heads close together like parrots, exchanging metallic confidences. "My dear," I said quite coldly, "if you haven't learned the Del Rey poem, all I can say..." and they flashed their pointed painted nails at each other and cackled. For the first time for 5 years, Collie Gibber was late in his program. At the foot of the Cosmopolitan steps, in the shadow, the huge bazaar building cast, he remembered that the mob had bought his paper. They hadn't needed to watch the public house for him. They knew where to expect him.
Been listening to High Waisted Modernists with me, DJ Gigi, the blue-haired hippie. Check out the archives at wfmu.org/playlists/HW.
Thank you. took me a second to make sure we were connected. So today's theme is the Fab Four. The fourth is a wolf. A few months ago, I had a dream that there was a werewolf trapped between my parents' driveway and my neighbor's driveway of the house I grew up in. And I don't remember much else except that the werewolf made me promise to... sorry if my mic was quiet. The werewolf made me promise to do a show called The Fab Four, The Fourth is a Werewolf. It's called The Fourth is a Wolf, so I hope that's sufficient. Yeah, it's bad luck not to honor the commitments you make in dreams. So we have a ton of weird Beatles covers combined with a few songs about wolves. I hope it's everything you ever wanted. Talk to you soon.
Yeah.